Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking, I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Welcome to New Books in Film. I am your host, Joel Cherney. My guest is Carla M. Wilson, author of the book Curious Impossibilities, 10 Cinematic Riffs. It was published in 2017 by Black Scat Books. In this inventive review of 10 famous films, Carla offers her thoughts on each movie by presenting imaginary interviews of famous directors, including Orson Welles, Jean-Luc Godard, and 8 others. Welcome, Carla Wilson. Hi, Carla. Thanks for joining me.
Hi, Joel. Thanks for having me on the show.
Well, I appreciate you coming on. We're talking about your newest book, Curious Impossibilities, 10 Cinematic Riffs. But before we get more in depth about the book itself, I'd like to get a little bit of background about you. What is your educational background? I mean, obviously, you obviously do have written now 2 books and other materials. So I'd like to get a little bit of background about you.
Yes. Well, I have jumped around quite a bit in my education. Going back as far as high school, I was always interested in writing. I was interested in writing, art, theater, you know, cultural studies, and also, you know, I took foreign language courses. So, and I could never really decide what I really wanted to pursue. My father received his master's degree in English literature. So I was always kind of leaning towards that route. And so for my bachelor's degree, I started off with a literature writing degree. And then as I went along, I was working and I found that that was taking a lot of time to, read and work at the same time. It was just not doable for me. So a friend convinced me to switch my my major to communications because I was also interested in radio, television, and film and that kind of thing. I did a radio show when I was in college for my undergrad, and I did some film editing and just dabbled in that, but I ended up getting my bachelor's degree in communication studies. And I also studied art at the same time. So I kind of jumped around, but the bachelor's was in communications from University of California, San Diego. And then it took me, I don't know, maybe 10 more years before I went back for a master's. And again, I started with something different other than what I ended up with. I started with an MA program in art history, and I was working, same thing. I couldn't get the classes I wanted. And so I ended up switching after I took a film and fiction class. I decided to kind of deviate from my art history studies, and I was actually looking for somebody who might serve on my thesis committee, if should it ever come to that. And so I thought, well, I need to get somebody who's outside of my major. So I said, well, I'm interested in film and fiction. So I took some film and fiction courses and ended up changing my major. I had to apply to the MFA in creative writing program. And so it all took me a very long time to get finished with everything. But I ended up with the MFA in creative writing and about a half of a degree, a master's degree in art history. I could probably go back and finish that. I'm a lifelong learner. In between there, I studied design. I studied, my husband is an architect, so I was always interested in interior design. I even started studying for law school at one point. So I really enjoy going to school and doing research and being educated. But ultimately, I think my passion has always been art and writing and film. So that's kind of where I ended up.
It sounds though like your final major was useful for everything that you wanted to do anyway. So, you know, the writing part was useful. The fact that you had interests gave you, and other things gave you where you could go with your writing.
Yeah. I mean, I think I had always wanted to be a writer ever since I was in high school. And in fact, I worked on newsletters and I worked the journalism club or whatever it was. And I tried to go into journalism, and I thought, you know, taking the communications courses would lead me into journalism. So it all had to do with the fact that I wanted to write. And so it all kind of came together with this degree.
It's funny because I went the other way around. And in undergrad, I started with a communications degree. Didn't finish it. Didn't get very far. I was interested in radio. I guess I was at the right age where radio was still very important. And then ended up eventually going and getting my degree in history. And then I ended up getting a master's degree in history, and then also a master's degree in library science. So working in a library is what led me to decide I needed to get a degree. Because libraries, your undergrad is only important as far as being a subject specialist, you know. But so history has been my forte, and film has always been something that's interested me in how not only just film and the history of film, but also how film deals with history and how film deals with popular culture and those kind of things. So everything together, it all sort of works together.
Right. And I remember from some of my early classes in communications where we had to learn about, you know, the early days of film and daguerreotype and the very first films ever made and all of that. So there was a degree of history in my communication studies as well.
And I want to, I'm
film
sorry.
History. Yeah, right. No, go ahead.
One of the things that I was back in the day that it was even prior to video, you know, before you could get videotapes and stuff. So I actually got a chance to see films during, it took a film study course as part of my undergrad that really went a long way, because we saw films that back then were the only places you could see them would be if somebody had a film festival or an art house. Mm-hmm. So that's nowadays it's much easier, but except there's so much out there, you're not even sure what you need to watch.
Yeah. And actually that reminds me, I participated in just briefly with a group that was doing an animation film festival, and I worked with them for a little while, just helping out. But But back then, yeah, we didn't have everything on, we didn't have the internet. So yeah, you didn't have access to films. You had to go somewhere to watch a film, or
right,
you had to go to a film festival, as you say. So
then obviously you've been writing. I already mentioned we're going to talk briefly about your first book, but besides the two books, where else have you written, or where else has your material been done?
Well, I also, here I kind of jump around. I've always been in love with poetry, although there's a lot of really bad poetry out there. And I've dabbled in writing poetry, and some very, have had some very short poems published just in online venues. And actually, there was also something in print. There's a group in England. It's actually a Buddhist group. I'm not Buddhist, but I like the idea of some of the ideas. And they put together an anthology of these short poems, which are meant to be small moments of paying attention. And so anyway, and the idea is to write one of these every day, pay close attention to something every day and write it down. And it can be similar to a haiku, but it doesn't have to have that structure. It can just be more free form. And so I messed around with that a little bit, and I had a few of those little poems published. I also, I wrote a creative nonfiction essay for a magazine called Talking Writing. And that was during a transitional point in my life. And that was really the first time I had an editor work with me. And she really kind of edited me up quite a bit, but it's just a different way of working with writing than creative writing, which is a lot more free form. So I've had a lot of various things published. I've published short stories, short essays in various online and print journals.
Yeah, I think these days, especially in the days of these days now that you can be quote unquote self-published,
yeah,
that the role of the editor is not always well understood by people. And we see it with nowadays where unfettered, or whatever phrases you want to use, like people just don't understand that the purpose of an edit, that there is a good reason for editors, and it makes it tougher nowadays. You have to, when you're picking out what you want to read and what you want to follow and those kind of things, that whether something's edit, you know, if there's an editor involved, it's always better to my, or mostly as far as material, because good editors know how to get the best out of the writer, as far as I'm concerned, just like a film editor gets the best out of everything that they have available to them.
Yeah, I think that can be controversial, though. That could be, you know, some people really hate being edited because perhaps what they're trying to convey isn't being understood by the editor, or it isn't being conveyed in the same way, and you lose the essence of what's trying to be said. But I agree. I mean, it was a good experience because she was trying to really direct the text in the way that she wanted it to go. I thought I was going in a different direction, and she really steered me in the direction that her magazine was, I don't know how to express it, but you know.
Oh yeah, it makes sense that you were writing for a specific purpose for them, and that makes a difference, as opposed to writing something completely on your own that you're not necessarily looking for a particular audience or you know, where a magazine or a periodical might care about that kind of thing.
Yeah, but I think it's a good experience to have and to have both. I mean, if I were to ever become a writer who was, you know, writing serial books or a series of books and be paid for it, I think I would expect to have an editor like that.
So then, so we have your first book, which came out in 2015, and we want to talk about that briefly because it actually is related in some ways to the current book. And that first book was Impossible Conversations, Imaginary Interviews with World Famous Artists. Can you describe I mean, I could sit there and more or less explain what that book is about, but what led you to that project? Because as I say, it is, you know, it is important for the current book. It sort of took you along the same direction. So what led you to that particular book?
That book was really an extension of my thesis. And it started off as an offshoot of my studies in art history. And I really wanted to find a way to incorporate writing about art or incorporate art and the study of art, I guess, into a creative venue. And so what my mentor at the time pointed out was that I really had a good ear for dialogue. And so I just kept on working more and more with dialogue. And that seemed to come naturally to me. And so I continued. I had done various just exercises during my MFA program related to art, and I chose some of the artists that whose work we were studying in the program, and then I just kind of went from there and extended the project. So it was meant to be a series of interviews with artists, filmmakers, and writers, and you know that. That project could really have gone anywhere. It could have been endless, and I had to really rein it in. And so I narrowed it down to 15. It was really difficult to decide, you know, which ones I wanted to do, where should I stop?
Because theoretically it could be endless since if they're imaginary, you can pretty much interview anyone.
Yeah, exactly. So I was playing with the form for one thing, which was the dialogue form, the call and response form a little bit. And I was also trying to incorporate real facts about the artists or filmmakers into the narrative. So I was trying to do several things at once, create a narrative, create some dialogue that was entertaining, as well as include historical or factual information about the artists into the book. So I did a lot of research, as I did with this one, with the new one, because that's part of what gets me going is doing the research, and then I try to, then I take my imagination from there and make it into something different, if I can. My advisor, my mentor in creative writing, has coined the phrase a docufiction, and his name's Harold Jaffe. He has written about 22 books, and he's sort of a master of this genre that he created called docufiction, where he takes actual, in some cases, actual news documents or you know, information from the internet, information from newspapers, and then creates a story out of it and sort of blurs the lines between fact and fiction. And it's quite funny, actually, he'll take a, you know, some of the news stories that are out there, similar to National Enquirer or, you know, things like that. He can take a story like that and then turn it into a short piece of fiction and turn it around. And so that's sort of where that influence comes from, using blending fact and fiction, and only I'm trying to do my own thing with it rather than, you know, doing the same thing.
That's interesting. Looking at the list of the artists, actually, if I'm looking at it right, and you can remind me if I'm wrong, there's only one person of the 15 that's actually still, you know, was actually alive at the time. Is that right? Yoko Ono?
That's right. That's correct. Yeah.
And then there's only a couple, the two film people were Alfred Hitchcock and Bela Lugosi, which is an interesting juxtaposition. but
yeah. Well, those two, again, my books tend to be very personal. And so I think my biggest influence in my life, having to do with film, my appreciation for film, has come from my dad. And so when I was younger, my dad and I used to go to all these films, and he loved Alfred Hitchcock, and both of us loved to mimic Alfred Hitchcock and do British accents and all of that. And then at the same time, you know, Bela Lugosi, mm-hmm. we would do the accent and go to the films and things like that. So it was really sort of a nod to my dad with those two.
Yeah, because I know going into the new book, you know, that came up in there too, that much of your overall love of film, and usually it's a personal thing that gets us into anything. We seldom go and get into something just by luck. There's right. There's usually a personal experience of some sort that gets you there. And in your case, you've mentioned that it was your watching films with your father. Mm-hmm. What kind of films did you, I mean, was it across the gamut of different types of films, or was, for example, did you watch foreign films with him, or was it more traditional, regular films that the average person would have known of, or was it a good combination of that, or what?
You know, I think it was a combination, but back in the 80s, you know, we used to go to art house films all the time. And I think I mentioned in my book, in the acknowledgments, that some of the films that we saw were films like Koyaanisqatsi, Das Boot, you know, Cat People. But there are also films like A Room with a View, and I mean, films that we would watch on TV later. We were always watching late night TV. We were always watching Buck Rogers late at night. And some of the Vincent Price movies. We even went to hear some of these people speak. We saw Vincent Price speak at the University of Wyoming when my dad was going there for his master's. And we saw John Houseman speak. And so I think my dad was always sort of a frustrated actor. He had studied acting a little bit in his youth, and he just loved movies. He loved going to the movies when he was a kid, and he is of the age when the newsreels were shown before right. the film. And so he always told me about that. And, oh, we liked all the the swashbuckler movies. I think he loved Errol Flynn and later Raiders of the Lost Ark and, oh boy, everything. You know, I think it really runs the gamut.
Right.
So.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that people these days, especially depending on their age, don't understand that going to the movies back, you know, in the day, like his period of time, was more than just going to see a movie. You mm-hmm. had, it was a whole event. You saw your cartoon, or you saw your, you know, short subject, then you saw your newsreel, then maybe a B movie, and then an A movie. And it was because that back, you know, it was pre-television, and, you know, that was just part of entertainment. And it's interesting that, and yet the good thing is we still have a lot of that. Like, we can still watch old newsreels to get a sense. And all you have to do is think to yourself, back in the day, back in those days, the only thing you had was radio for news and obviously newspapers, but the visual aspect, the only place you could see a visual representation of something was in the movies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Definitely. And, you know, he was always, he became a teacher later. So he loved to tell his experiences. And so I think that really influenced me and my love of film. And he was really a big influence.
So then the new book is, this time, it's only film.
Right.
There are 10 different filmmakers. I found, you know, interestingly, and if I correct me if I'm wrong, but I think I've got this, that only one of them is American, and that's Orson Welles. And mm-hmm. many people would say he's barely an American writer himself, but mm-hmm. I mean, a filmmaker, that so much of what he did would have been much more normal in Europe. But so you new book is, like we said, Curious Impossibilities, 10 Cinematic Riffs. First off, I guess, what made you decide to do a new book and this time just feature filmmakers?
Well, I think this was an extension of my first book, similar to how my first book was an extension of my thesis. I just wanted to keep going with interviewing people that I found, you know, fascinating. And I just started playing around with ideas. And I actually started off with Louise Brooks and Dora Maar. And I even, you know, wrote some chapters on Louise Brooks, Dora Maar, and Picasso and their relationships. And I wanted to keep the art element into it, in it. And then I just kept on working with these ideas. And in, as my drafts came along, I just realized that I could focus more, you know, just on film and have it be a little bit more based on a sort of conceptual fragmented writing style. And I could incorporate that more easily if I kept it with film. And really, that's the idea with this book, is to sort of create an entire, it was a big undertaking, I should say, because I was really trying to create a piece of art with this book that is overall something like a film within a film within a film.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure if that actually worked, but that was what I was going for.
So, like we say, 10 filmmakers. What, first off, how many did you actually think about originally? And I know obviously there are 10 included, but I'm going to guess there were other ones too that were, you were thinking about, or did it always pretty much come to these 10?
No, there was so many. I kept on. It's the same thing with writing about the artists. I kept on coming up with more and more filmmakers that I loved, and in the end, I really just had to narrow it down to 10. I wanted to include some of the heavy hitters of the avant-garde, and then I wanted to include something that was a film from various genres. Mm-hmm. So I have, you know, the Orson Welles Touch of Evil to include a noir, and I wanted to include a film noir. I wanted to include a sort of sci-fi, and that's where the Truffaut film Alphaville comes in. So it's really hard to say how I ended up with these 10, but it was more a matter of just narrowing down which films would work together, and they all are connected in some way for personal reasons. Some of them were films that I saw while I was in school in my MFA program. Some of them were films that I hadn't seen before. I hadn't seen Alphaville. I hadn't seen Persona. And then some were films that I wanted to revisit and I wanted to research, wanted to find out more about. So in doing the research, I learned more about the film, and then I got to watch the films. And actually, just to be completely honest, I think I thought, oh, this is going to be easy. All I have to do is watch films, which I love doing, and then I'll just write about them, because films usually inspire me, just the way a piece of art inspires me. But it's extremely difficult to find a point of entry, you know. So what I ended up doing was watching the films over and over several times, took copious notes, and then did research into the films themselves, into the filmmakers. And I tried to figure out what really struck me. What was the main thing that resonated with me? Not so much, you know, what is this film best known for, or what is the best thing about this film? It was more what actually resonated with me, and what sort of commentary can I make with that point of entry, mm-hmm. you know? And at the same time, I was trying to keep the form in a sort of fragmented way. Sort of fragmented and in keeping with, you know, the essence of the film. So I was trying to give readers a sense of the essence of the film, but at the same time, express some of my own philosophies about life, relationships, and... Well,
it seemed like it was a better way to, rather than doing a film review, which is supposed to be quote unquote objective, you were able to put something together where you were able to, as you point out, show your feelings, not just on the actual film, but how it affected, you know, how it may have been affected by other things in your life too. So that was definitely... It certainly seemed much more free, you know, definitely free form, but also it must have been somewhat liberating in this sense of being able to express your beliefs or your ideas and your feelings using these films as your point of entry.
Yes, exactly.
Now, as you mentioned, it's each filmmaker, it's just one film that you chose to discuss with each one?
Can you repeat the question?
I'm sorry. Each you've got, you know, Fellini and all the other, but it's one film for each filmmaker, or did you bring in some of their other films too?
Well, for Tarkovsky, for example, I tried to give the essence of Tarkovsky. So I focused on the film The Sacrifice, which is a challenging film in itself. But when I did some research about Tarkovsky, I saw, you know, repeated themes and same thing with Bergman. And I read what Bergman said about Tarkovsky, what Tarkovsky said about Bergman. And I would like to think that some of my research about the filmmakers themselves and what they were doing in various films sort of came through. Even though I was focusing on one film, it could hopefully give the essence of their thematic style, I guess. So, you know, I think really what I was interested in was, you know, giving the essence of the filmmaker's style, but then incorporating poetic language into that.
Right. So, I guess the obvious question I wanted to ask, how do I ask this? Did you like all the films that you actually included, or did you purposely pick a film possibly that you didn't particularly care for, or were they all, did you purposely want to go for films that you felt were meant something to you in a positive way?
I would say after writing about the films, I've definitely come to appreciate all of them. The one that I think, and for the most part, I did already like all of them. But I tried to go for ones that were a little bit challenging. So the Rope Grier last year at Marienbad, when you read about that film, it's, you know, it's hard to get a sense of any final clarity about that film. So I tried to pick films that were challenging to me. I would say the Bergman Persona was not one of my favorite films. There's, you know, some of the films that make you uncomfortable, like the Tarkovsky, the Bergman, even the Orson Welles, The Touch of Evil. I wouldn't say I would go back, and they can be a little tedious. So, you know, in some ways.
Well, but I guess that means, yeah, it's actually good that you were able to find the time or the willingness to watch them over and over again, as you said, and yet still you understood obviously that there was something important with them, even if in the end, you know, they said something to you, even if it wasn't necessarily always positive.
Yeah, I was really looking at each filmmaker's technique as well as, you know, were they visually appealing? Were they, what was the narrative? Was the narrative straightforward or was it fragmented? And I think for the most part, I was going for narratives that were fragmented in some way. And that's really how I ended up picking the majority of the ones I picked. When I went back to do, to look at what I had written about Louise Brooks and some of her films, I couldn't it didn't go with the rest of the what I was trying to do with the rest of the films. So I was really trying to keep with that one, the fragmented concept. And so I probably enjoyed Louise Brooks' films more than I enjoyed some of the difficult French films, but you know, I was really trying to go for a sort of a postmodern fragmented conceptual theme there.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, did you decide in your own mind as you were, or, first off, I guess I should ask, when in the process did you decide these were the 10, or did you have other ones that you got pretty far along with and then decided they didn't fit, or what, did it reach a point reasonably early on where you knew these were the 10 films you were going to work with?
You know, it's my time is sort of limited because I actually work full time at a university, and I work in just a regular day job. I'm an administrator. And so I don't have the luxury of having a lot of time. And so I wanted to finish up, and I was coming to a point where I needed to finish. And so it's sometimes it's just a matter of that. It's like, how do you know when a painting is done? Or how do you know when, you know, your essay is finished? You can always keep going with something, but at some point you have to finish it. And so I think I originally had 15 films or filmmakers chosen. And then I said, I'm just going to narrow it down to 10. And that just is part of the my own editing process. I think another part of it was wanting to come up with a title. And I thought, well, 15 cinematic riffs doesn't sound as good as 10 cinematic riffs. So that's kind of how it went. And it was just honestly a matter of narrowing it down and editing. And I think I could have gone on. I think of films or filmmakers I would love to write about.
Well, then you can always write more Curious Impossibilities, 10 more cinematic riffs. But early on, though, in the process, did it look pretty obvious they were mostly going to be foreign films?
I think so. You know, I didn't intend for them to all be foreign films. It's just that those were the films that Fellini has always been a heavy hitter with me. I enjoy, I think it's always been foreign films that have been my favorite. That's another personal thing. My mother is from Europe. And so I think maybe that's where that comes from. I studied French in my younger days. I had about 8 years of French. And so I enjoy watching French films. And it's as simple as that. You know, same thing with German. I can speak and understand German pretty well. So none of these are German, but, you know, we have just the European sensibility, I think, that I'm sort of drawn to, as well as the experimental side, you know, of the French New Wave. It was originally going to be probably more focused on the French New Wave, but then I thought, well, we have the Italian New Wave, but then we have films that are, you know, going outside of the 60s. So we're getting into the 70s and 80s. So what do I do there? And so trying to keep everything thematically close, I had to narrow it down.
So where did, are any of these, excuse me, let me start that again. Are these, many of these films, were these the first time you'd actually seen them, or how many of these would you say were films that you were reasonably familiar with even before you got started working on this project?
With Fellini, I had seen most of his other films, but I hadn't seen 8 and a Half. And that was the one film that I really wanted to see. So that was my impetus there. With Tarkovsky, I had seen The Sacrifice a few times. And then I actually went and watched a few of his other films just to see if I would want to do another one. The Duras and Robe Grier, and I had seen before. The Chris Marker Sans Soleil, I had seen, mostly in school. Mm-hmm. Godard, The Alphaville, I had not seen that one. And so that was, again, something I wanted to do, something that I wasn't tired of, or that I hadn't been, I thought hadn't been really written about in a creative way, at least not recently. And the Truffaut, that film I had not seen. And I had seen many of his other films. And again, this one seemed to be less well known. So I chose that one, and I really liked the idea of the film within a film for for that one. That one was probably the most fun to do. And you know, the day for night, everything about that was layered. So it was writing about a film within a film. And you know, we used the actual script screenplay format for that, and we really, my publisher and I really had a lot of fun with that one. The Bergman Persona I hadn't seen, and that one was one I wanted to research more. I've only seen a few of the Bergmans, so that one was one that had been widely written about. And I did some research about that one. The Orson Welles I had not seen, The Touch of Evil. So I ended up seeing that one about 3 times, and that one was great. And The Taste of Cherry by Ershadi, that one I had seen in school, and that actually, that essay is something I wrote while I was doing my master's.
Where did you, I mean, obviously you've seen, you in order to do this, you had to watch these multiple times. These days we're pretty lucky in that we have the ability to watch a lot of films, including unusual ones. Where do you do most? Where do you find most of your films? Is there a particular site or area that you watch your films from that you think particularly useful for you?
Well, we used to have a really great video store here in San Diego, and they recently closed. But we could get all these old films on DVD or even video. So I used to go there, but now it's been a matter of I have to get them either on Amazon and rent them or purchase them. Or let me think, where did I get? There's something called the Criterion Collection.
Oh, yes, of course.
And yeah, so I'll go there, you know, for a lot of information. Now, that's something that I had wanted to mention, but I got a lot of good research information from there. And in fact, there were some letters between Truffaut and Godard that I read about on that site where they had a big fight. And so that's what I sort of riff off of in the Truffaut chapter. So I sort of am riffing off of the fight between Godard and Truffaut, where they had a falling out. So I sort of have Godard give a cameo appearance in Truffaut's film, and he shoos him away and tells him to get out. So, yeah. So Criterion Collection is one source, and otherwise I'll just dig around online or you know, I have a stash of old films as well in my DVD collection and VHS even.
Which of the films would you say most, let's see what word I want to use, surprised you in either a positive or negative way when you were studying it and you were doing your research? Was there one or two in particular that you came away with having learned something completely different than you had thought, or something new?
I'm always up for a challenge. So I really try to find when I'm going to research something, I want to try to find something that I don't already understand. So I can get a better sense of what is going on with this. You know, I think that's partly what led me to study art, because I thought, I don't get it, and I want to understand what is this about, you know? So I think one of the most challenging ones was, there were two, the Tarkovsky and the Robbe-Grier. And, you know, I think in the end, what it comes down to for me is it's always about the person, and it's always about the technique. You can have the technique, anyone can use a particular technique, but I think what makes art interesting is the person's background. And so, you know, in both of those cases, those two, filmmakers and writers, Robbe-Grier was also a writer, had very compelling backgrounds, which led them to create what they created. So hope that makes sense.
No, it does. And don't worry. Well, I know there's a lot of pauses you were thinking, and I, but don't worry. It'll sound totally smooth.
So, sorry. Yeah.
No worries. So now, having finished this second group of riffs, so to speak, interviews and riffs, do you have other projects in mind, or are you working on other things? I know you pointed out that it's not the easiest thing in the world to do, given a full-time job, and I know that well, to do other creative things. So, but what are your thoughts for the future as far as continuing your writing?
Well, I've always wanted to write a mystery. That's one project that I sort of have going, but I tend to try to keep away from traditional narrative form, which may or may not be a good thing. I think I kind of want to do a mystery in the traditional form, but then I have an idea to do one that's sort of different. It'll be a series of stories that add up to one longer story, series of short stories that lead up to one longer story. That's about all I'll say with that, because I'm not really sure if I can pull it off. But I try to keep the form short, because I don't have a lot of time, and my focus is more and more fragmented. Again, right now I'm recovering from surgery, so I have time and I'm home, but my focus isn't there.
Right.
So, but nothing really wonderful has struck me yet, but I'm working on several different ideas at the moment.
Well, it's my experience from reading I mean, I tend to be one of those folks who like to hear a little bit about the background of what an author, how an author comes up with ideas and things like that. Mm-hmm. Most authors will say the same thing, which is sometimes it just hits you out of the blue. And some authors can just spit it all out, but most of them require a little bit of a lot of thinking and a lot of consideration before they can come up with a project and continue to, you know, something to move forward with. So I'm not surprised that you're that same way.
Yeah. Well, getting started is the hardest thing. Once you're in it, then you have something to jump off of and you can say, well, I've done a few pages or a few chapters and now I can move forward. I can continue. But when you have the blank page in front of you, it isn't so easy to get started again. I know everybody says that, and everybody talks about different techniques for how to combat the blank page. And, you know, and I think it's true. Mainly, one just has to write and start something, and then you can go back and edit later. But getting something that sparks you, your imagination, or that gets you going, that just sometimes takes a while. It doesn't come out of, sometimes it comes out of nowhere and then you, and it really flows and you don't have any trouble at all. And then other times it's, you know, you're completely blank.
Well, I really appreciate you taking the time to speak with me about your book. What I found the most interesting about it is that you did play with a form and you were experimental. And given that many of your filmmakers were experimental in this book, it seemed like the only right way to approach it sometimes, you know, be experimental in a different way. But it was just as interesting in that sense that you played with the form and came up with interesting things to say about each film and the filmmakers behind them, even without actually ever talking to the real people.
Well, thank you. Yeah, it was an attempt at experimental writing about experimental film, and it was my homage to some of the heavy hitters in experimental film. And, you know, I think it's important to preserve these old films and art and culture that we don't always care too much about anymore these days. So I think it's important to preserve them.
Thanks again, and really enjoyed our conversation.
Thank you very much for the interest. Thanks for having me.
Thanks to Carla for her interesting conversation. I hope you find her creative concept very enjoyable. This is Joel Cherney, and I will be back soon with more new books in film.